I'd like to actually first give a biographical sketch of the Netziv, to be followed by some of his comments regarding the land of Israel. So the Netziv, his name is Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. And there's a Yiddish folk legend about the Cheder, and it was studying Parshas Yisro. So the Rebbe began with the first Pasuk, Vayishma Yisro Choyin Midian Chosein Moshe. And Yisro, the priest of Midian, the father of Moshe, heard all that God did for the Jewish people. So one clever student raised his hand and said, Rebbe, how is it possible for Yisro to be Moshe's father-in-law? Moshe was a priest, and priests can't have children. So the Rebbe thought for a moment and said, it was before Matan Torah. Much of what I have to say about the Netziv actually was from a source that existed pre-art scroll, unedited. So please bear that in mind if I say anything that, God forbid, contradicts art scroll. The Netziv, as I said, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he was born in 1817 in the town of Mir. That's today in Belarus. It was 2 years after the Mir Yeshiva was founded, and about 15 years or so after the Yeshiva in Volozhin was founded by Reb Chaim Volozhiner. The Netziv's father was a wealthy businessman, and shortly after Bar Mitzvah, the Netziv married a girl by the name of Reina, who was the granddaughter of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Shortly after Bar Mitzvah, he got married, so he was able to double up on his thank you notes. But her father, Reb Itzela, was Reb Chaim Volozhiner's son, and that actually would be crucial for 25 years later down the road, when the position of Rosh Yeshiva opened. And they lived in Volozhin, and Netziv became a member of the Yeshiva. And now, there are some people who are just naturally brilliant. We all know such people. I had a couple of classmates. Rabbi Rocco is one. Rabbi Shmuel Hirschler is another one. They're absolutely brilliant people. You're not looking at one. But Rabbi Fassman, Zichrono Lebracha, told me the story about when he met the Rogachover Gaon, Rabbi Yosef Rosen, in Dvinsk in 1934. It was Shivel Sarbatam was the 17th. The time was Rogachover wasn't fasting. He had just recently had surgery. Rabbi Fassman was on a trip to Europe in Israel with a friend of his from the yeshiva, Rabbi Uri Miller. And they wanted to meet many of the great rabbis of that era from Europe and the land of Israel. So among those they met were Rabbi Chaim Ozer Grodzinski, the great posek in Vilna. Rabbi Yoel Herzog was the chief rabbi. He was the rabbi in Paris. His son, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Levi Herzog, became the chief rabbi in Israel. And they met Rav Kook in Haifa. They met Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, and they met the Rogachover Gaon. Now, the Rogachover Gaon was known as a person with an mind that was an encyclopedia, and he had a photographic memory. So I like to say also a photographic memory. I'm missing some film. But the pictures that show him with the long hair, Rav Fassman said that's true. Those are true pictures. He had long hair. He never cut his hair. There was some halachic question regarding education that was going on in America, and they began discussing it. So Rav Fassman said between he and his friend Rabbi Miller, they maybe said 8 words in 2 hours. The Rogachover, like a machine, kept spitting out opinion after opinion after opinion. And he said at first, he said it was unbelievable just listening to it, but literally just one after another, nonstop. And finally, when he finished, the Rogachover said, well, it's about time to daven Maariv. So Rabbi Miller said to him, Rebbe, what does the Rebbe mean, about time? And then the Rogachover went for another half hour discussing the whole concept of time. Okay, so finally, when they were leaving, so the Rogachover asked them, where are you going? He said, we're going to the land of Israel. So the Rogachover said to them, well, they don't know how to learn there. And he slammed the door in their face. But the Rogachover was one of these naturally brilliant people. But the Netziv wasn't like that. The Netziv said about himself that he was not a naturally brilliant person. He had to work for everything to accomplish. Everything took much effort. And therefore, even his father-in-law didn't appreciate him, which I guess is not unusual for fathers-in-law. But until the Netziv was working on a commentary of the Shiltos Rav Achoy Gaon. Rav Achoy Gaon, he was not one of the Gaonim. He lived at that time, like in the 8th century. Actually, it was in Israel. He produced the first halachic work after the completion of the Talmud. And the Netziv was working on a commentary, and then his father-in-law developed new appreciation of his son-in-law, who was a star just on the rise. The Nativ's father-in-law, Ritzler, died in 1849. He was succeeded as Rosh Yeshiva by Rabbi Eliezer Fried, who was married to the oldest daughter of Ritzler, known as the Nativ's oldest sister-in-law. 4 years later, Rabbi Eliezer Fried passed away, and there were two candidates for Rosh Yeshiva. One was the Nativ, who again was married to Rav Chaim Volozhiner's granddaughter. The other candidate was Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi, who was married to Rav Chaim Volozhiner's great-granddaughter. He was the great-grandson of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. His mother was a granddaughter. So again, the Beis Halevi, he was the father of Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav Aaron and Yosef Beer's grandfather. So you had the grandson-in-law of the Rav Chaim Volozhiner and the great-grandson of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, both in position for Rosh Yeshiva. And in this, Volozhin again was the mother of the yeshivas. The yeshiva was split. Some favored the Nativ, some favored Rav Yosef Beer. The Beis Halevi. Now, the Beis Halevi and the Nativ were friendly. They weren't enemies. But they had different styles. The Beis Halevi style, as Moshe Soloveitchik worded it, was you had to know the daf of the Gemara. If you knew the daf well, you can know Shas. Well, you picked apart every piece and every part of the Gemara. The Nativ's opinion was you had to know Shas in order to know the daf of the Gemara. You had to have a broad knowledge. The split went on for about 10 years, and then they decided, but the yeshiva thrived in the meantime, but they had to have one leader, couldn't have two leaders. So there was a Din Torah, and among those listening was a young Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, who became the rabbi in Kovno. So the head of the Beis Din said, you know, this is like Parshas Vayeshev, not that it was actually Parshas Vayeshev, but it's that situation. He said, if you start from the beginning of Breishis, every Parsha in the Chumash has opponents, right? There's conflict, and the choice is clear. So in the first Breishis, you have Cain and Abel, so Abel was righteous, Cain wasn't. Parshas Noach, you have Noach and his generation. Noach was righteous, the generation wasn't. Avram versus Lot, so the choice is clear, Avram. And then you had Sodom and Avram, obviously Avram. Avram and Avimelech, Avram and Paro, it's always Avram. All right, then you had Yitzchak and Yishmael, so obviously it's Yitzchak over Yishmael and Avimelech, again Yitzchak over Avimelech. Yaakov and Esav, again it's clear, you go with Yaakov, Yaakov against Lavan, again you have Yaakov, until you reach Parshas Vayeshev. Parshas Vayeshev is Yosef and his brothers. They all were tzaddikim, righteous peoples. Who do you choose? So really, there's no wrong choice. But in the end, they decided in favor of the Nativ. He became the lone Rosh Yeshiva. The Beis Halevi went to Slutsk, and in 1877, he became the rabbi in Brisk. The Rugged Shavar Gaon was a student of the Beis Halevi. So try to imagine two minds like that in one room. It's difficult. Actually, Rabbi Sugarman in Israel told me, which was actually on the way to Rabbi Fassman's funeral in Israel, or on the way back, I forgot, on the plane. He told me, so he's a student of Rabbi Yosef Beer Soloveitchik in NYU. So Rabbi Yosef Beer was in, there was a class in Berlin, he and the Lubavitch Rebbe were in the same class. And it was, again, Johnny, you feel bad for the professor in a case like that. But he also said in that class, there was a class they weren't, Rabbi Yosef Beer said, they weren't allowed to cover their heads in class. They had to sit bareheaded. So Rabbi Yosef Beer sat bareheaded in class, the Lubavitch Rebbe sat bareheaded in class. But Rabbi Yosef Beer said, the Lubavitch Rebbe sat right next to the door. He wouldn't walk four amos without his head covered. So he sat right next to the door. The moment class was over, he was out and his head was covered. But later on, the Nativ and the Beis Halevi were reunited, because the Beis Halevi's son, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, married the Nativ's granddaughter. And they became, again, so... I'm okay, thank you. Thank you, though. So, again, they were never enemies, but they were reunited again down the road. Now, Rosh Hashanah was not an easy position. There's so many points that the person has to deal with. Rabbi Wein spoke in my shul several years ago. He mentioned when he found this his yeshiva in Muncie, he asked Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who also lived in Muncie at the time, for advice. So Rav Yaakov told him three pieces of advice. I'm going to tell you the first one last, because it's the one I really want to bring out. So we'll start with secondly. So Rav Yaakov told Rabbi Wein, just as a hospital is for the patients and not for the doctor, a yeshiva is for the students, not for the teachers. It's an important lesson. And we're there for the kids. We're not there for ourselves. Then he also told them there are certain students you're going to have to throw out. That comes with the position. But how you throw them out makes all the difference in the world. If you do it correctly, don't keep a connection to the Jew. You'll keep a connection to them. They'll keep a connection to the Jewish people. You don't do them the right way, you lose them. Now, the first thing he told them was that yeshiva shouldn't be a Sodom bed. Now, in Sodom, the legend is in the Medrash in Sodom, every you have to be the right size. If you're too long, they cut down your legs. Too short, they stretched you. He said, a yeshiva shouldn't be a Sodom bed. He said, you want boys who are different. And then Rabbi Yaakov told Rabbi Wein that Rabbi Chaim Moshe Grodzinski, in the great Posig of Vilna, told Rabbi Yaakov that when Rabbi Chaim Moshe was 11 years old, he was thrown out of yeshiva. Because he brought a goat to the yeshiva and he told his Rebbe, the goat knows more than you do. And the Rebbe tossed him. So that was, the Rebbe didn't like that news. And the Rebbe tossed him out of the yeshiva. So he said, you need boys, you need kids who are different. And which actually reminds me of a similar story from our family when our son Sruli was at Leva Torah, Ramat Beit Shemesh. The director of the yeshiva, Rabbi Citrin, came to Chicago to recruit. So I drove him to the airport, and on the way, when he was done, on the way to O'Hare, so we stopped at Ari Crown to pick up our youngest son, Nasanel, and then we're going to go over to Shul to Daven Mincha. Now, Nasanel was 11 years old, and after we dropped off Nasanel at home, we went to Shul, and then we're going to go out to the airport. After picking up Nasanel, Rabbi Citrin and Nasanel got into a conversation in the car. And every time Rabbi Citrin answered a question, the son would ask him, how do you know that? And Rabbi Citrin jokingly said, I'm a rabbi, I know everything. That was everything. I'm a rabbi, I know everything. And he was jokingly saying that. Then we stopped at the house, dropped off Nisanel, and we headed back to the car. But at the door, Nisanel said to Rabbi Citrin, today's my birthday. And Rabbi Citrin said, oh, I didn't know that. And Nisanel said, hi, you don't know everything. And he slammed the door in his face. So after he got into the car, Rabbi Citrin said, wait a minute. He went back into the house and he told Nasanel, he said, when it's your time to go to Israel, I want you to be in my yeshiva. And the last week, Nasanel received his letter of acceptance from Leva Torah. So yeshiva should have boys who are different, right? Not all from the same cookie cutter. So my son Daniel told me, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik quoted his father of Aaron, in the Parshas Bereishis, when it says, "Ki b'tzelem Elokim baro," so "Vayivra Elokim esdom b'tzamel," God created man in His image. "B'tzelem Elokim baro," so He created him in His own image. It's redundant. As the Rav Aaron said, that the idea is "B'tzelem Elokim baro," so He created him, meaning the person. Everybody's in their own image. Everybody is different, and you have to work for everybody's strength and help out everybody according to the strengths and emphasize those, and then you'll be successful with the person. So the Tzeev's philosophy about running his yeshiva was that every student was his only child. There's stories about people come in, and then the Tzeev would point to a boy and say, that's my only child. And then he point to another one and said, that's my only child. So that's how he treated each student. He looked after the student's welfare. He wanted every student to eat regularly, drink regularly, sleep regularly. He said, that's how you become a masmid. You do everything what you're supposed to be doing. You have to take care of yourself. And if you don't eat or sleep properly, your learning won't be what it should be. So he said, you have to take care of yourself. And it's not like, some people feel they have to be in the basement 24 hours a day. If you can do it, that's great. But most people can't. And you have to be healthy. Now in Russia, students with good heads couldn't go to university. And so the yeshiva was the only game in town. And as time went on, there were seeds of haskalah, of assimilation, and enlightenment were planted in the yeshiva. And it became an active cell of haskalah. And there were students who were maskilim, they were enlightened, there were students who later became communists, some became revolutionaries. There was one of the leaders of one of the unions here in America, Sidney Hillman, back in the early 1900s, was a student of Volozhin. He had Chaim Nachum Bialik, who was not so religious later, but he was a student of Volozhin. He actually said about the Netziv, the Netziviest of all the boys for Pesach Seder. And Bialik said, if anybody was at the Netziv Seder, you can never eat non-kosher again in your life. Whether you're religious or not, you can never eat non-kosher again in your life. They said about the Netziv. There was another writer, Micha Yosef Berdichevsky, who, after he finished Volozhin, he felt the Jews should drop religion and all their traditions and history. Again, there was Volozhin and everything in it, because again, it was the only game in town. There also on the enrollment list is a boy from Chicago, Isaac Anixter. His father's in Rabbi Kushner's book. He was one of the early rabbis in Chicago. And he might have been the first like American boy to be sent to Europe to study to learn Torah. Now the Russian government also interfered in running the yeshiva. In 1877, there was a disgruntled student informed against the Netziv about quote unquote anti-government activities, and the student forged a letter with the signature of the Netziv. The Netziv was arrested. And he finally was freed after he was able to disprove the forgery. Now, the signature on the letter looked exactly like the Nassim's letter. The legend is, the forger did an excellent job. The forger made one major error, which the Nassim disproved. And the Nassim, again, his name was Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. So whoever forged the letter, spell it, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, with a Yud at the end of Tzvi, and Yud beginning with Yehuda. However, when the Nassim would sign his letters, he only signed it with one Yud. He ran Tzvi Yehuda together. So he proved it from his letters. And that's the legend, whether that's true or whether the legend is true or not, but the Netziv did disprove the charges against him. However, that got the Russians on his back. And eventually, the Netziv had to close the yeshiva in 1892 because the Russians said you have to have all sorts of secular education, and then they put in times you have to do it with the bulk of the day. And he couldn't put up with all the secularization that the Russians wanted in the yeshiva. He tried to raise funds to pay off the debts from the yeshiva. He also wanted to move to the land of Israel. However, he became ill. He died in Warsaw in August of 1893. I've seen the grave the grave in the cemetery. It's a huge cemetery. It's a large cemetery in Warsaw. He's buried. His grandson, Chaim Soloveitchik, is buried there also. Reb Pupko told me an interesting story about Chaim Soloveitchik was doing in Warsaw. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik had a brother who wasn't religious. And Reb Chaim Soloveitchik went to try to talk to his brother to try to get him back. And he was in Warsaw, and he died in Warsaw. The Netziv had a son, and he had two daughters from his first wife. His son was Rabbi Chaim Berlin, who was born in 1832. And he was only 15 years younger than his father. And again, who got married shortly after Bar Mitzvah. Now, it wasn't unusual for people to get married shortly after Bar Mitzvah, 13, 14, or 15, simply because life expectancy was shorter, and they had to get an earlier start in life. Now, Chaim Berlin was not named after the yeshiva. The yeshiva, which originally was called Yeshivas Tiferes Bachurim, was named after Chaim Berlin at the urging of his much younger half-brother, Rabbi Meir Bar Ilan. Rabbi Chaim Berlin was the rabbi of Moscow. I think he was the last rabbi of Moscow till our time. And eventually he moved to Jerusalem and assisted Shmuel Salant, and he died in 1912 in Jerusalem. The Netziv's daughter married a Rabbi Rafol Shapiro, who assisted the Netziv in running the yeshiva. After she passed away, the other sister married Rabbi Rafol Shapiro. The Netziv's second wife was Batya Miriam. Now, she was his niece. She was the Netziv's sister's daughter. The Netziv's sister was married to Rabbi Yechiel Michal Levi Epstein, Aruch HaShulchan. And there was another son, Baruch Levi Epstein, the Torah Tamima. One of the Epsteins, I think one of the brothers ended up here in Chicago. Ephraim Epstein, he was here in Chicago. There was one of the sons, Ephraim Epstein's son, was actually killed in Hebron in 1929. Batya Miriam was about 30 years younger than the Netziv. She had actually been previously been married to a fellow who was very wealthy, but he was an ignoramus. She had thought he was supposed to be something different, a Torah scholar. Turns out he was an ignoramus. She wanted a husband who was steeped in Torah. So she left her husband, and who first refused to give her a get. Finally, he did give her a get, and then she married the Netziv. And her brother, as I said, Baruch the Torah Tamima, authored that's the famous work, the commentary on Chumash, and he also wrote the biography of the Netziv. He lived with the Netziv in Volozhin for a long time, and it's called, and that was part of it was doctored after it was translated into English, because there's some things in there that didn't seem too yeshivish, so you know, everybody liked it. The Netziv and Batya Miriam had a son, Meir, who was born in 1880, and the Netziv was 63. Meir eventually became the head of the World Mizrahi Movement, and is better known as Meir Bar Ilan. Batya Miriam was a special woman. There's a few lines of what Meir Bar Ilan wrote about his mother. Again, you won't find it in standard biographies because, again, it's not too yeshivish, and you know, certain things you don't write. So he wrote like this: if the inner and outer life of the yeshiva students of Volozhin was different than of the students from other yeshivas, it was due in part of the influence and dedication to Torah and kind deeds of the Rebbetzin of Volozhin. She, of course, had not only extraordinary talent and intellect, but also dedication and understanding in regard to the Torah in general and in relation to the yeshiva in particular. She handled the yeshiva's financial concerns with broad authority. The entire financial burden lay upon her, and these can overwhelm even the greatest people. And she wanted to make sure that her husband, the Netziv, didn't find out, have to worry about any of the financial burden. So when my mother came to Volozhin in her youth, people marveled at her beauty and elegance in speech and character. So imagine people nowadays speaking about the wife of the Rosh Yeshiva. She's a gorgeous woman, a beautiful woman, and it doesn't, again, you won't find it written anywhere. But this he writes about his mother. And when she went into the street, people gazed after her, and when she had to deal with someone, people talked about it. And the money that many yeshiva students received from their parents or friends, she made sure the students got it. Like the mailman, the rain, sleet, snow, didn't make a difference. She made sure the boys got the money. And it was therefore no wonder that all of the yeshiva students, even when they left Volozhin, considered my mother to be an important part of the yeshiva. When yeshiva students, among them famous gaonim and leaders, considered themselves her students in the love of Torah, for in this she herself was a gaon. And that is quite a description by Rabbi Meir Bar Ilan, and he writes it about his mother. Again, it's not the mold that you would find in a normal biography written today. So that's just some biographical sketch of the Tziv. Now, where does this feeling toward the land of Israel come in? So one of the rabbis in Volozhin returned from a trip to the land of Israel, and the Tziv asked him about his trip. And the rabbi said, you know, there were Jews in the land who don't necessarily follow their religion. So the Tziv yelled at him, and he said, "Get out of here, you spy." So the rabbi was a little taken aback and said, "I was just telling you the truth." So the Tziv responded that the spies also told the truth, but they were punished because their intentions were to prevent Jews from going to the land of Israel. Anyone who tried to create discouragement of Jews going to the land of Israel, even though he may be telling the truth, is a spy and an informer. And then those are strong words. But he writes in Ha'amek Dover, which is his commentary to Chumash, said the land of Israel is the finest country in the world. He said there are many good countries, some of them better than Eretz Yisrael, but they lack the important factor of personal attachment and sentiment with the Jew has for Eretz Yisrael. Any country that cannot arouse an awareness of those factors spells doom for the Jewish people and brings evil upon them in the long run. On the other hand, Eretz Yisrael is blessed with constant guidance of God. Any endeavor there is back with their moral awareness, and any gain is justly achieved, as opposed to elsewhere where gain is only temporary. So I mentioned earlier that there was a cell of Haskalah in the yeshiva in Volozhin. There was another cell called Nes Tziona, which is flags towards Zion. It was founded in 1885. The Netziv did not object to that group because he himself was a supporter of the Chovev Tzion. But the group had to be disbanded because the Russians again found out about it and said it was anti-state. In 1890, another group was formed that also backed the cause of Eretz Yisrael, love of the land and love of Torah scholarship. It's called Netzach Yisrael. Some of the members of that group, Rav Kook, Rav Issachar Zalman Meltzer, Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who became the Rosh Yeshiva in Slobodka, he moved part of the yeshiva from Slobodka to Hebron. And after the massacre, they moved it to Yerushalayim. But again, the group Netzach Yisrael disbanded with the yeshiva in 1892. In Russia, during the late 1870s, early 1880s, there was a strong support for large-scale immigration to the land of Israel. And the group was called Chibas Tzion. Its followers were called Chovevei Tzion. And that's 20 years before political Zionism. It was a secular group. The head of it was Leon Pinsker. However, the Netziv and other great rabbis were strong supporters, among them Shmuel Molovers. It was like a secular group that had religious motivation to it. Now, Shmuel Molover piqued the interest of Baron Edmund Rothschild to support the cause of settlements in the land of Israel. The Carmel Wine Factory, this is Carmel Mizrahi, there's a Carmel in France and in Israel, it's called Carmel Mizrahi, was funded by the Baron, the Rothschild, and he produced wine, and the story is the first bottle of wine that he produced, he sent to the Netziv. It was then in Warsaw, and the Netziv put on Shabbos clothes because it is the first bottle of wine coming from the land of Israel. He said it's superior to other wines, and we have a wine sale in Shul coming up in a couple of weeks. You know, and it's also wine tasting. So you know, people, you know, they like you have wines from Israel and the wines from California, wines from New York, and so it sometimes irks me. Sometimes people say the wines from California or New York aren't as good as the are better than the wines from Israel. Wines from Israel, but they might not necessarily have the same taste, but they have a better taste to them. And they're from Israel. Chov Beit Zion itself had internal strife. One of the questions about the settlement of the land was it should have traditional Jewish values or secular. One of the issues that came up was the Shemitah year of 1889. Now, in 1882 was also a Shemitah year, and many of the people, there weren't that many Jewish farmers at that time, so they all observed the Shemitah then. By 1889, however, there was a bad pun, there was a large crop of new farmers, and most of the leadership of Chov Beit Zion wanted them to work the land during the Shemitah. They were afraid, if you don't work the land, what's going to happen to the settlements? Baron de Rothschild was very much in favor of doing it. They didn't want the people to violate the Shemitah, but they wanted the land to, they were afraid of letting the land go. And thus the Heter Mechira came into being about selling the land to non-Jews, so you can work the land. Now the Netziv opposed the Heter Mechira. Shmuel Melover was in favor of it, and the Netziv was against it. The Netziv felt that when developing the land of Israel, it has to be done properly. And the Heter was an unnecessary leniency. Shemitah nowadays, he said, is Durabbanan, is rabbinical. Selling the land of Israel is a total prohibition. So you can't sell the land of Israel. It overrides the Durabbanan of the Shemitah, so you can't sell the land. Others supported that in Mechir. Rabbi Yisrael Chanan Spector supported it. The division actually weakened the Chov Beit Zion. And eventually you end up with the Zionist movement came along, headed by Herzl. So I mentioned earlier that Netziv wrote a commentary called Hamik Dover. So in it he writes many comments strongly supporting the land of Israel. So here are a couple of those comments. So when God spoke to Moshe the first time, it's in Parsha Shmos, and said that he would bring the Jewish people to the land of Israel. So God refers to the land as Mekom HaKanani. I'm going to bring you to the place of the Kanani. Now he doesn't say Eretz HaKanani. I'm going to bring you to the land of Kanani. It says the place of the Kanani. So the Netziv writes, it says it doesn't say Eretz HaKanani because in truth it is not their land from the point of creation. But they're living there at this time. So that's again in our. It's like saying in our times, it's Jewish cities inhabited by Arabs. That's the same thing. Now we try telling that to the Palestinians or the United Nations, right? So it sounds like Mayor Kahana, and it's very, you know, it can't say such a thing. The Netziv writes it, so it's stronger than Mayor Kahana. In the beginning of Parshas Vayera, God said to Moshe, I'm going to give you the land of Israel as Morasha, as an inheritance. The Netziv writes, it's not only for the time that you'll be there, but even when you're in exile, it's yours. Like a person who is away from his family inheritance and wants to return. So that's he says about the land of Israel. There's a whole list of things, again, about the land of Israel. Very strong statements regarding the land. So we can look at the Netziv as a Netziv itself, I mean the word means pillar, is a founding pillar of what we call religious Zionism, even though he lived before the Zionist movement. So what's religious Zionism? Who is the Netziv? It's not that he defined religion through Zionism, but rather for him, his love and appreciation of the land of Israel was a part of his love of Torah. As I said, he wasn't naturally brilliant, But he was a sophisticated person. And we see with his stand about Shemitah that he was able to separate his halachic analysis from his feelings for the movement about there was settling the land of Israel. And at the same time as being obviously very pro-religious, yet he accepted the fact that there were those who were not religious people who were founding the land and doing the dirty work to build up the land. He recognized that. So we live in a complicated world. Nothing is simple, particularly related to the land of Israel, the state of Israel, and the existential questions that the state faces on a daily basis. And as much as the Nesiv is a historical figure, he's also very contemporary. His issues are our issues. You know, selling the land, giving away land, secular education, our relationship with people who are varying degrees of religious observance. Therefore, it's worthwhile to think about the Nesiv, his personality, his accomplishments, and his strengths as they apply to each and every one of us. Yeah, thank you. I give you a test.
You
know,
you don't want to ask me questions.
Any questions? So I have to ask. If I intimidated everybody, I guess.
How long did he live?
He died in 1817 to 1893. And again, his son, Meir Bar Ilan, died in 1949. But again, his Meir Bar Ilan was born, was building bar mitzvah, and then the Nesiv died. He was again, he was the son of his old age, but from the second marriage.
So when he says Shemitah was willing to rabbanim and not to sell the land, so what he's really was saying then is that not to observe Shemitah rather than to...
No, you had to observe, you couldn't sell, you're not allowed to sell the land.
Right,
so you had to observe Shemitah. You had to observe Shemitah and whatever, God will help out. You know, that's the way to run, that's, you have to run it. You have to run, you're settling the land, you want to start it on the right foot.
So the choice of observing selling
away
or not observing
Shemitah
at all?
He had to observe the Shemitah. That he wouldn't hold by that. Even Shmuel Moliver said you observe the Shemitah, but you sell the land, so then you're working non-Jewish land, not working Jewish land. But then Steve said you can't sell land of Israel.
So